Guadeloupe is not just an island. It's a paradox wrapped in sugarcane and rebellion. A French overseas department that flies the tricolor, speaks Creole in defiance, and carries the blood memory of enslavement, resistance, and renewal. To walk through Guadeloupe's market squares or along its volcanic ridges is to witness centuries of conflict and culture. Catholicism beside carnival, baguettes beside bocket, Parisian laws clashing with ancestral rhythm. But behind its postcard beauty lies a deeper story of black identity shaped under white rule, of African retentions filtered through colonial filters, of indigenous erasure and a people who refuse to forget. It's a place where rum is distilled from rebellion, and every drumbeat in a guoka circle calls back to the Maroons who once hid in the hills. Guadeloupe is France, but not quite. Africa, but not fully. Caribbean, but uniquely its own. What happens when a people are told they are French, but feel profoundly Caribbean? And how do language, cuisine, religion, and resistance keep a culture alive when borders are drawn by someone else? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. From Volcanoes to Village Squares, the Living Layers of Guadeloupean Identity. To understand Guadeloupe, you must begin with its shape, a butterfly resting on the Caribbean Sea. One wing, Basse-Terre, rises green and mountainous, cloaked in rainforest, and crowned by the smoldering peak of La Soufrière volcano. The other, Grande-Terre, is drier and flatter, dotted with limestone cliffs, sugarcane fields, and windswept coastlines. But beneath that poetic symmetry lies a deep cultural imbalance between heritage and assimilation, Creole soul and French order, memory and forgetting. A land claimed, reclaimed, and still in question. The first to inhabit this land were the Kalinago, or Caribs, indigenous people whose legacy today is more myth than memory. When Christopher Columbus arrived in 1493 and christened the island Santa Maria de Guadalupe de Extremadura, he set into motion centuries of transformation and trauma. By the 1600s, France had seized the island, establishing it as a profitable plantation colony. Sugar became its gold, and African lives the cost. The French colonial model in Guadeloupe was brutal and comprehensive. Africans were ripped from West and Central Africa, shipped to this butterfly-shaped outpost, and forced into a rigid plantation economy. The Code Noir of 1685, Louis Soultina's decree regulating slavery, ensured both spiritual conversion and physical subjugation. Catholicism was required, rebellion was crushed, African names were erased, but not forgotten. Today, when a Guadeloupean elder drums in a guoka circle or calls out in Creole, he speaks across centuries. Beneath the French-speaking classrooms and the Eurocentric school curriculums, Guadeloupeans have kept something that couldn't be enslaved: their rhythm, their voice, their sense of place. Language wars, French tongue, Creole heart. In the classroom, children are taught the glory of the French Revolution. But on playgrounds, they joke and sing in Creole, Guadeloupean Creole, a language born from colonial chaos and African syntax. For years, it was seen as vulgar, improper, even punishable in schools. To speak Creole was to mark yourself as less French, and therefore less legitimate. But in the late 20th century, a cultural revival took root. Poets like Ernest Pepin and musicians like Kassav began reclaiming Creole not as a dialect of survival, but a language of power. It was rhythmic, emotional, percussive, more suited to telling the Caribbean truth than anything in the Académie Française. In Guadeloupe today, Creole lives in homes, in churches, in the vibrant call and response of the market square. It sings in the voice of vendors selling bocket, a deep-fried bread stuffed with saltfish and spice, and echoes through funeral chants, carnival songs, and rebellious speeches. And yet, in the eyes of the state, it is still second tier. Official documents remain in French. Courts operate in French. To succeed, many believe, is to master the language of the colonizer. But in the margins, Creole thrives like the roots of a mango tree, buried, unbroken, and always ready to burst through the asphalt. Catholicism and counterculture. The altar and the drum walk into a church in Basse-Terre on a Sunday morning, and you'll hear hymns sung to the Virgin, Mary. But wait till night falls, and another ceremony may begin. This time, around a guoka drum, with feet stomping, hips rolling, and chants that summon something far older than Catholic saints. This is not contradiction. It's coexistence. In Guadeloupe, Catholicism and Afro-Caribbean spirituality don't cancel each other out. They dance in uneasy alliance. Many Guadeloupans identify as Catholic. Churches dot every town, their bells calling out across cane fields. Baptisms and communions are rites of passage. Yet, in the quiet corners of community life, traditions rooted in African cosmology continue, whether through herbal medicine, ancestral veneration, or symbolic rituals, Guadeloupans keep the line between seen and unseen thin. It is not uncommon for a devout Catholic to also visit a guérisseur, healer, when Western medicine fails, or to pour libations for a dead relative on All Saints' Day. The colonial project tried to suppress African spirituality, but Guadeloupans learned to mask the drum behind the altar. And that drum, the guoka, is more than instrument. It is heartbeat, resistance, identity. Each of its seven rhythms has a story. Grage for labor, woulé for community, tumblak for sexuality, and seduction. During slavery, these rhythms kept memory alive. Today, they summon not just the past, but a pride. Cuisine as cultural rebellion. To taste Guadeloupean food is to taste history, spicy, smoky, and unapologetically Creole. Consider the colombo, a thick, turmeric-laced curry inherited from Indian indentured laborers, or the smoky fish blaf, marinated in lime and garlic, or dombre, dumplings in red bean stew that comfort like a grandmother's lullaby. Every dish is a collision of worlds, African, French, indigenous, Indian and Chinese. But Guadeloupean cuisine is more than delicious. It's defiance. In colonial times, enslaved Africans were given scraps and expected to survive. They made miracles with salted cod, morn sele, pigtails and breadfruit. Over time, these survival foods became national staples. Today, a family feast might feature stuffed crab, rum-soaked cakes, and akras, deep-fried cod fritters seasoned with parsley, scallions, and fire. Even food reflects a paradox. French gastronomy influences menus, but the soul of the cuisine remains Creole. A Guadeloupean chef may train at Le Cordon Bleu, but still credit their grandmother's mortar and pestle as their first culinary teacher. And the rum? It's revolutionary. Literally. Guadeloupe's rum agricole, made from fresh sugarcane juice, is a symbol of local craftsmanship and former rebellion. Toasting with a tea punch is not just tradition, it's a ritual of survival. Education and the battle for memory. What do Guadeloupean children learn about themselves? In state-run schools, French history dominates. Napoleon, Charlemagne, Joan of Arc. Caribbean history is often an afterthought. The names of slave revolts, like Delgrave's final stand in 1802, are not always given the space they deserve. French universalism preaches equality, but ignores the weight of colonial wounds. This dissonance has birthed a generation of activists, educators, and artists pushing back. Organizations like CIPN, Comité International des Peuples Noirs, demand that the French state reckon with slavery as a crime against humanity. Authors publish countertexts. Spoken word artists use stage and screen to recenter Guadeloupean identity. And carnival, perhaps the island's most important cultural institution, is a rolling, dancing protest. Each February, the streets explode with satire. Parades mock political figures, colonial symbols, and even the French president. The final act? The burning of Vaval, the carnival king, a papier-mâché effigy of the year's woes. Guadeloupeans watch it burn with laughter, grief, and defiance. Migration, memory, and the French passport. Guadeloupeans carry French passports. They vote in French elections. They serve in the French military. But when they arrive in Paris, many find they are not considered fully French. In mainland France, Guadeloupeans are often racialized, othered, and patronized. This dual identity breeds both opportunity and alienation. Many leave for higher education or employment in France, often returning with degrees and a deeper sense of exile. Others stay, fiercely loyal to the island, but frustrated by economic dependency. Unemployment remains high. Food and fuel prices are shaped by distant markets. Riots in 2009 and 2021 over cost of living and health mandates revealed long-simmering tensions. To be Guadeloupean is to live in a loop, part of France, but never equal. Independent, but not sovereign. Conclusion. The pulse, beneath the pavement. In Pointe-à-Pitre's central market, you'll hear it. The hum of vendors hawking spice blends and homemade jams, the thrum of a guoka drum, the laughter of school children switching effortlessly between French and Creole. The scent of fried plantains mingles with sea air. Behind every stall, a story. Guadeloupe is a place of echoes, of ancestors, of struggle, of joy defiant in the face of forgetting. It is a cultural palimpsest where Catholic saints wear African names and the French flag waves over memories that refuse to be colonized. And the question still simmers in every pot of Colombo. What does it mean to belong when your country is both oppressor and protector? When your passport says French, but your heart drums guoka? We'll explore that deeper in Chapter 2, where carnival masks fall, independence movements rise, and Guadeloupe's most guarded truths come roaring to the surface. Chapter 2. Masks, Maroons, and Modern Resistance, The Fight to Define Guadeloupe, A Burning King and a Nation in Disguise. Every February, Guadeloupe catches fire, not from the volcano, but from carnival. Carnival here is not just a party. It's a masquerade of politics, memory, and resistance stitched into costume and beat. For 6 weeks, the streets of Basse-Terre and Pointe-à-Pitre erupt in color, satire, and sound. Each group, called a groupe à peau, or skin band, pounds handmade drums and parades through neighborhoods wearing devil horns, colonial uniforms, or grotesque caricatures of French politicians. Satire is sacred. The more provocative, the better. At the end, they burn Vaval, the papier-mâché carnival king who embodies the year's injustices and sorrows. One year he's a corrupt official. Another, a COVID vaccine. Another, a colonial specter with a powdered wig. It is performance, but also protest. For many Guadeloupeans, carnival is the only time they can speak freely, mock authority, grieve publicly, and reassert who they are behind the mask. And that's the paradox. It takes a costume to tell the truth. The Maroon Memory. Guadeloupe's hidden rebels. Long before Carnival became a spectacle, Guadeloupe's first rebels were the Maroons, Africans who escaped the plantation system and fled into the mountains. They carved out secret villages in the forests of Basse-Terre, surviving off wild fruit, hunting, and solidarity. French authorities called them bandits. Guadeloupans remember them as heroes. One name echoes louder than the rest, Louis Delgrès. A free man of color and colonial officer turned rebel, Delgrès led one of the most powerful uprisings against Napoleonic forces in 1802 when Napoleon attempted to reinstate slavery after it had been abolished during the French Revolution. Trapped with his troops at the Fort Saint-Charles near Basse-Terre, he chose death over re-enslavement. He and over 300 followers ignited the fort's powder reserves, shouting, "To live free or die." It was not just a rebellion, it was martyrdom. Today, Delgrès is memorialized with statues, museums, and a square in his name. But his story remains undertaught in French schools, even in Guadeloupe. His ghost is honored more by grassroots artists and historians than official textbooks. Guadeloupe's Maroon memory is sacred and buried, not in shame, but in survival. The mountainous terrain where they once hid is now crisscrossed by eco-trails and tourism ads. But elders know which waterfalls once held whispers of freedom. Colonial ghosts in modern governance. Guadeloupe's political identity is a hall of mirrors. Technically, it's a département d'outre-mer, an overseas department of France. That means it's part of the European Union. Citizens vote in French elections, carry EU passports, and pay taxes to Paris. But the relationship is hardly equal. Guadeloupans often speak of a dépendance structurelle, structural dependency. Nearly 80% of the island's food is imported from France. Fuel, medicine, school books, even construction materials are tied to French supply chains. Agriculture has withered under global competition, and young professionals frequently emigrate for opportunity. Unemployment remains high. Youth disillusionment is rising. Social services are stretched, and infrastructure is aging. But it was the COVID-19 pandemic that truly ignited rage. In 2021, Guadeloupe erupted in weeks of violent protests. What began as resistance to mandatory vaccine mandates and poor health services turned into a broader revolt. Protesters set fire to vehicles, blocked roads, and occupied government buildings. They demanded investment, respect, and the end of state neglect. The French government responded with riot police. But to many Guadeloupans, the real virus was not COVID. It was colonization. The pandemic only exposed the infection. Health, trust, and the Chlordecone scandal. One of the most insidious betrayals of the French state was invisible, odorless, and hidden in the soil. From 1972 to 1993, the pesticide Chlordecone was widely used in Guadeloupe and Martinique to protect banana crops. It was already banned in the US due to its links to cancer and hormonal disruption. But the French state authorized its continued use, despite knowing its dangers. The result? A public health crisis. Over 90% of Guadeloupians tested have traces of Chlordecone in their blood. Cancer rates, especially prostate, have surged. Rivers, soil, and farmlands remain contaminated. And the toxin will persist for centuries. For many, this was not just environmental negligence. It was biological colonialism, a slow poisoning of black bodies in the name of profit. When asked to account for the damage, French officials offered apologies, but no full reparations. The phrase crime d'état, state crime, echoed across radio shows, protest banners, and artist murals. This scandal radicalized many young Guadeloupans. It shattered illusions that the Republic would protect its overseas citizens. It turned farmers into activists and musicians into revolutionaries. Voices of resistance, music, literature, and identity. While the French curriculum might try to silence Guadeloupean history, its artists refuse to be quiet. The sound of zouk, pioneered by the legendary band Kassav, was born in Guadeloupe in the late 1970s, blending Creole lyrics, funk bass lines, and Afro-Caribbean percussion. It became both a dance floor phenomenon and a cultural declaration. Zouk was more than music. It was affirmation, a way to sing Creole into global consciousness. Today, younger musicians fuse zouk with reggae, dancehall, and hip-hop to speak truth to power. Artists like Admiral T and Kalash voice the frustrations of a generation caught between emigration and identity crisis. Writers, too, carry the torch. Maryse Condé, Guadeloupe's most acclaimed author, has spent decades dismantling colonial myths through literature. Her novels, Segu, I, Tituba, Crossing the Mangrove, explore race, gender, exile, and survival through deeply Creole lenses. When she won the Alternative Nobel Prize in 2018, she dedicated it to Guadeloupe. And still, bookstores in Paris often relegate her to the foreign literature section. Religion, spiritual survival, and the invisible world. If Catholicism is the face of religion in Guadeloupe, then African spirituality is its pulse. Even today, many Guadeloupeans live between two spiritual planes. They may attend Mass on Sunday, but also consult a quimboisseur, or spiritual medium, when facing illness, heartbreak, or unexplained misfortune. Ancestral spirits are not fantasy. They are family. Rituals may include candles, rum offerings, or coded prayers whispered over herbs. These practices are not superstition. They are memory systems, spiritual software coded to survive enslavement, displacement, and ridicule. The Catholic Church once demonized these beliefs. Today, many priests look the other way, or blend ceremonies to keep congregants engaged. The result is a religious culture unlike any other, a hybrid of West African cosmology, French Catholicism, and Caribbean pragmatism. Spiritual power is often matrilineal. Grandmothers guard knowledge of herbs, dreams, and rituals. In a society marked by patriarchy and economic hardship, these women are silent anchors. The fight for autonomy, independence versus identity. The independence movement in Guadeloupe has always walked a tightrope. On one hand, activists argue that true cultural self-determination requires political freedom. On the other, many citizens fear the economic shock of leaving the French state, loss of subsidies, decline in social services, and the risk of isolation. In the 1980s, the independence movement surged. Political groups like the UPLG, Union Populaire pour la Libération de la Guadeloupe, staged protests and underground campaigns. A few militants took up arms, resulting in arrests, exile, and crackdowns. But support for full independence has rarely surpassed 10% to 15% in public polls. Most Guadeloupeans desire autonomy, not secession. They want to control local laws, culture, and economy while maintaining ties to France for practical reasons. This is not apathy. It's complexity. To be Guadeloupean is to want the right to define yourself without burning your only bridge to healthcare or education. It is to demand sovereignty of culture, if not yet of currency. What the French flag can't contain, stand at the top of La Soufrière and look out. Green hills cascading to turquoise sea, tiny fishing boats, fields of sugarcane swaying like memory. You will see beauty, but you will also feel tension. Guadeloupe is not France. Not fully. But it is not a colony anymore. Not officially. It is a cultural middle passage, trapped between continents, identities, and possibilities. And in that liminal space, Guadeloupeans are inventing something new. Something hybrid, resilient, and rooted. they are reclaiming lost languages, forbidden rituals, and contaminated lands. They are protesting, creating, teaching, and refusing to be defined by anyone but themselves. They are rewriting history books, one verse, one recipe, one carnival march at a time. Conclusion? Who gets to define the island? Guadeloupe is not an island of contradictions. It is an island of layers. French, yes, but also African, Caribbean, indigenous, and fiercely Creole. Its culture was shaped by trauma, but refuses to be defined by it. Its people carry French passports, but answer to ancestral drums. Its youth speak fluent French, but dream in Creole. Its soil bears poison, but also the seeds of rebellion. So the question isn't, is Guadeloupe French? It's, what does it mean when identity is layered in resistance and history is a wound you refuse to let scar over? Guadeloupe is more than a tropical getaway. It is a mirror held up to France and to the world, and it dares you to look.